You're listening to episode 86 of 88 Cups of Tea with Yin Chang.
Am I doing this right? Hi, I'm your host, Yin Chang, and thanks for joining me on 88 Cups of Tea. This podcast is created to leave you feeling motivated from interviews with storytellers, where we learn how they create opportunities for a successful career without losing sight of the values that make us human. Whew, that was a really long run-on sentence.
Hey, what's up, Storyteller Tribe? I wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for being so incredibly supportive of our show. I appreciate each and every one of you for joining us every week. And if you just found our show, thank you so much for making your way through our archive of episodes. A special note for our listeners who recommended our podcast to your friends. Thank you so much for helping us spread the word. I really appreciate it. I also wanted to say I'm so grateful to all of you who've subscribed to our show on iTunes and left a review and a rating for our show. A huge shout out and thank you to our listener who recently left the following review under the name KG with headphones on. KG wrote that this podcast is all levels of awesome and continued to say, "Thank you so much for this lovely podcast. This is a favorite part of my day, whether I am out for a walk or simply have my headphones on while I'm cleaning. I have to be sure to check out the show notes after each episode to write down all the fantastic nuggets of information that are just too good. Yin, you are a wonderful interviewer. Your enthusiasm, bubbly nature, and streamlined questions get to the heart of what your readers want to know. Looking forward to more interviews and inspiration. Thanks, KG." Wow, thank you, KG, for that incredible review. I'm so touched and I couldn't be happier knowing that you're taking away all these nuggets of information from our episodes. Seriously, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to write that, and I'm so grateful to have you in our community. On to the next part of our show. Have you joined our private Facebook group yet? It's the perfect place for you to be if you're looking for a loving community to hang out with fellow storytellers and to check in with each other about your work in progress. We also post threads where you can submit your listener questions for upcoming interviews with really cool guests. I know there's a lot of you craft-focused writers out there listening, so if that's you, there's amazing questions and resources passed around in our group, and there's even more support and encouragement going on in there. By the way, we also just recently started recording live Facebook videos that's exclusive only for our members in our private Facebook group. We're talking about book hauls and unboxing videos, and sometimes I'll even record live videos where I'll chat with members in our group while I prepare dinner. So be sure to come over and hang out with us at facebook.com/groups/88cupsoftea. You'll feel right at home, and I'm so excited to hang out with you in there. That's facebook.com/groups/88cupsoftea. Now on to our show, we have Sandhya Menon with us this week, a refreshing new voice in young adult fiction. Her debut, When Dimple Met Rishi, is a charming romantic comedy that celebrates first love, and at the core, the story explores one's own independence and voice in the world. As you'll learn in our conversation, Sandhya moved from India when she was 15 years old, and she shares how she adapted to her new surroundings in America, and how she was able to draw from those experiences for her book. She shares in detail how the idea of When Dimple Met Rishi was originally pitched to her by her editor. Sandhya walks us through how indie publishing brought the world of traditional publishing to her and how her agent also discovered her through Amazon. You'll also learn how YouTube and Pinterest played critical roles in Sandhya's research for the setting of her book. This is a really fun episode, and I'm so excited for you to hear it. Now let's jump right in.
Hey, everyone. We have Sandhya Menon with us today. I am so excited to have her with us. I know a lot of you are hearing a lot of buzz about her book coming up, When Dimple Met Rishi. By the time you hear this episode, her book will be dropping in about a week or 2 weeks. I'm super excited to have Sandhya with us today. Sandhya, how are you?
Hey, thanks so much, Yin, for having me on today. I'm so excited to be here.
We are so, so pumped, and I really cannot wait to just dive right in. How did you fall in love with writing?
How did I fall in love with writing? Wow. I have to say, I'm one of those people who can't quite remember ever not writing. I don't remember ever falling in love with it, but I remember as soon as I could write and I learned how to make words and sentences, I was writing stories and poems. I've always loved it, and it's just been a childhood dream of mine to be a writer, and so it's kind of surreal to be in this place now.
Oh, that's amazing. What about reading? What was reading like? How did that influence you growing up?
Same thing with reading. I was an avid reader ever since I was little and could pick up the book, and I remember that in India growing up, we didn't really have libraries like we have here. in the state, that was kind of an interesting experience because we had basically a woman who functioned as our neighborhood librarian.
Oh.
Yeah, so she ran this library from her home, essentially. And the books were all old donated books from people around the community. And you could check them out. And there weren't late fees or anything that I remember. But of course, she knew our moms, which was the worst thing in the world, you know, if you were late. That was a pretty good way to keep us on track.
Your accountability partner, for sure.
Exactly. So that was how that worked. So it was great because people who went to her were there because they actually had this amazing love for books and they just wanted to read anything that they could get their hands on. And I was kind of the same way. And I would read pretty much anything that I was allowed to read and that wasn't nailed down. I just fell into reading that way. And then as I got older and I could write and I realized that it was a thing that I could do, I got into writing too. So they were connected from the beginning for me.
Ooh, I love that. That's so awesome. Did you go to school for writing? Since you have been writing forever, was it just something that was a secondhand natural talent for you?
Yeah, exactly. I did not go to school for writing. I actually majored in psychology in college, which I think was a really good plan. It wasn't something that I actually planned. Like, oh, I want to be a writer. So learning how people think and behave will help me or anything. I fell into it because I loved psychology. And I considered majoring in English, but I remember everybody, pretty much my college advisors, my professors, everybody saying, don't do that. So I was like, well, okay, you guys scared me, so I'll do psychology instead. But it worked out really well because it kept writing as my passion. I didn't get burnt out on it. You know, I wrote when I wanted to. So it worked out really well because I didn't even try to honestly start getting published until I was in my late 20s. So until then, it was just for me.
From then till that moment where your late 20s, where you started to decide to want to publish a book, when was that moment? Because I know there's a lot of writers, when they're now published authors, they never really realized you could be an author as a career. Was there a moment for you where it completely was that light bulb moment? Oh my gosh, that can be me writing the books that I grew up reading.
Yes, that's a great question. I always felt I wanted to be a published writer when I was young. And I think it was because I had an uncle. He was a novelist, but he was a writer and he worked in advertising, but he would also write pieces for newspapers and things like that. I always knew that was a thing that you could do, but I never thought about writing a book-length work. When I got to my late 20s, it was indie publishing actually that brought that world to me. So this was 2011-ish, and I was doing some research online about writing. And I came across this whole community of people who were self-publishing. I knew that at that point, I didn't want to be in the query trenches, as people call it.
Yeah.
I had this idea for like a dystopian novel, and people were already saying, oh, dystopian is over. But I knew that people were still reading it, so I wanted to write it and get it out faster than traditional publishing could at that point. So that's how I realized, wow, I could actually have a book by the end of this year if I wanted, if I went this route. And that's how my first novel came to be. Oh, I shouldn't say my first novel. It wasn't the first novel I'd ever written, but it was the first novel that I deemed suitable for readers' eyes.
I think most of us can understand this in this community. We've definitely heard from authors too who've written 12 books before they felt they were ready to start pitching it. We understand, girl. Thank you for sharing that. Before I dive into more questions, can you give the community a snapshot of the world you created for When Dimple Met Rishi, which is coming out May 30th?
Yeah. So When Dimple Met Rishi, my editor says it best. She has a very pithy log line for it, which is, it's Eleanor and Park meets Bollywood.
I love it.
Yeah, I love Eleanor and Park and I love Bollywood. So it works for me. It's about two Indian American teenagers whose parents arrange their marriage and only one of them knows about it when they meet.
Where did this inspiration come from?
The inspiration was actually my editor, and not a lot of people know this, even though I haven't been quiet about it. It actually wasn't my idea at all. My editor, Jennifer Ung, who works at Simon Pulse, came up with this kernel of an idea, and she wanted an Indian writer to write it. She had this idea for two Indian American teens, and their parents arranged their marriage, and they're very much opposite of each other, and that's all she had. So she reached out to my agent and asked, hey, do you know of any Indian authors who might be interested in writing something like this? And that's how it all started.
That's really fascinating because I think you might be one of the few, if not only, author that we've had on the show who mentioned a story idea that came about that specific way, which is really interesting to me because the writers I've talked to, the way they query and land their agent is with the book, usually the one that's about to come out or has already come out. Just rewinding timeline-wise, to get your agent, what was the book that you reached out to her with or the log line? Was it that dystopian one that you were talking about before or was it something totally different?
The way I got my agent was a little bit unconventional. I think my whole writing journey has been very unconventional. But my agent actually found me through a novel that I wrote that wasn't my dystopian. It was actually the second novel that I self-published. It was a contemporary adult novel. My dystopian did fairly well. It reached pretty wide audience. And my next novel, which was a contemporary, didn't reach a very wide audience. But she picked it up because she was looking for contemporary books. And she just happened to stumble across it on Amazon. And she read it. And she reached out to me to say, hey, I read this book. And I know you're indie published, but I'm wondering if you would be interested in a traditional publishing career or representation. That's how we started talking. And I was like, well, this is interesting because I had never written off traditional publishing. I just didn't want to spend all that time querying. So when she reached out to me, I was like, hey, this is neat because this way I don't have to be in the query trenches. So let's find out if we are compatible. And so that's how we landed up together.
Dang, that's awesome. I'm sure there's a lot of listeners out there like, what? That is so cool.
Right? It's like a one in a million chance that that would ever happen. But yeah, it was so crazy and it was amazing that it happened because we work really well together too.
Oh, that's amazing. And much deserved too to you.
Oh, thank you.
That is a very fascinating journey and your own specific story. So from there, you were like, okay, let's just feel it out and see how it goes. So how has that journey been since then?
It's been great. My agent and I, that same book that she liked, Hachette ended up buying that book for their digital only line. So it wasn't actually in stores or anything. It won an indie self-published book award too, which was great. And then after that, I went into a writing slump and I didn't know really what I wanted to do. I kept sending my agent different projects. You know, they'd kind of fizzle out and I just wouldn't really be feeling it. So I'd set it aside and I didn't know what I was doing. And so I went back to grad school. I decided to go get my degree in clinical counseling. And I was doing that when my agent Tao got in touch with me and she was like, hey, there's this editor at Simon Pulse who has this idea. Do you want to talk about it and see if that's something you might be interested in writing? And that's how I fell back into writing.
Holy moly. Talk about when it's meant to be, it's meant to be. I don't know of any situation where that would have really happened and it happened to you.
No.
That just shows you are meant to write and don't you dare try and go away from it. Whoever's
right.
Looking out for you, the universe, whoever is like, girl, you better get back in your seat and continue giving your gift to the world. Seriously. And I don't see it any other way. Usually with these, I'm assuming they're like, hey, can you get the story idea done by a certain timeline, deadline? Did they give you time constraint with this?
There was definitely a time constraint. I forget what it was, but I think it was 3 weeks or something like that.
3 weeks?
Yeah, not to write the whole book, thankfully.
Okay. I was like, girl.
It was for the proposals. They wanted a synopsis of how I envisioned the book turning out, some key scenes, including the ending, and as well as the first 30 pages, that they could get an idea of my voice and how I envisioned the story and whether it was going to be a good fit and all of those kinds of things.
Other than your editor mentioning, hey, this is a idea, did she give you any other details to fill in the spots, fill in the blanks, or it was really just, here's a log line of an idea I think is cool, you run with it?
Yeah, so it was kind of in the middle. She did have an idea that she wanted, and she had the character names, so Dimple and Rishi are not actually the names I came up with. She did know that the whole thing needed to take place over this coding camp, which I love the idea of. And that was pretty much it. Oh, and the setting, she wanted it to be in San Francisco.
Ooh, I wonder why. Is it because it's really super techie there and it makes sense with the coding camp?
Yeah, and I think that they wanted it to be a very summery, fun book. And San Francisco, California just feels super summery and fun. And plus, my editor is originally from California.
Okay, there we go. I love that.
What was so hilarious and was telling her was that she chose the names Dimple and Rishi because they were actual Indian friends she'd had a long time ago. And it turned out that Dimple and Rishi are actually also Bollywood actors.
What?
Who, yeah, from the 80s. But they actually did go out and all of this stuff. So it was just so funny that she just happened to choose these two names.
I love the name Dimple. I think that's the cutest name ever. I think of Dimple and I think this character is such a positive human being. And Rishi just sounds badass. I love it so much. And by the way, I love the cover of the book too. Did you have a say in that? Or is that totally in the hands of the publishers and the other side?
A little bit of both. The cover designer, Regina, she had this idea for the cover almost even before I started writing the book. As soon as she heard the idea for the book, she had the concept in her head. So they did a cover shoot and everything like that in New York. And she came up with a couple of concepts and I kind of chose the one that really spoke to me and we just ran from there.
Okay, so you actually had a pretty big part in this then. I feel most authors don't really have too much of a choice. It's usually just presented to them.
I did, and I think that's because of the way that my editor and the whole Pulse team has been super welcoming to me, and they've always wanted me to feel this was a collaboration rather than just them dictating things to me. It's been such a great experience for me. I feel very well taken care of and we're all part of a team rather than everybody doing their own part.
This is just still so cool to me because I've never heard of a book being done this way. Like you mentioned, a very collaborative process. And I think that's such a great way. And I never realized this is an option for authors too. Let's talk about a little bit more on the research side. Where were you living while you were writing this book? And where do you live now?
While I wrote this book, I was in Charleston, South Carolina. I'm currently just outside Colorado Springs, Colorado.
Oh my gosh, I heard it's beautiful there.
It is. It's so beautiful. And we live in this little town that's 7,000 feet elevation. Oh, yeah, we get some crazy weather here too.
I'm sure you're super healthy too and super fit with all that great air up there.
Yeah, let's just go with that.
So you were not in San Fran when you were writing this book. I mean, please tell me you had excuses to go out for research because you were able to capture San Fran well in your story. So what was the research process like?
Sadly, I did not get to go to San Francisco. I know. I did manage to wrangle a trip to San Diego. So that's about as close as I got. I did do a lot of research through YouTube videos where people actually would take their camera and drive through the city or walk through the city and visit all these different places. So you felt like you were really there. And it was amazing. I read up on weather patterns and I just did a lot of different kinds of research. I remember following some people who lived in San Francisco just to get an idea of the kinds of things they would talk about local things. Pinterest was another.
All hail Pinterest. Hours of your day is gone. You're not productive anymore. Now it's becoming from research to interior decoration to great food recipes. That's awesome. Okay, so were there other ways of doing research as well?
Yeah, so there's YouTube, there's Pinterest, Google Maps, of course, Street View is amazing. Mm. I also went to some, I forget the name of the website, but there's a website where people can talk about their cities. It's a forum, basically, for each city. And so I joined the one for San Francisco. We just watched people having conversations about it.
That's so smart.
Yeah. And it was just a great way to learn about the city. And plus, California itself was on my bucket list for visiting. Ever since I lived in India, I just felt it was so exotic and amazing to get to go to California. So it was definitely my way of indulging that side. I did go to San Diego, which was also an amazing city.
I can understand why you're in love with San Diego. I'm in love with San Diego too.
I know. It's hard not to be. So I can't wait. I'm going to go back to San Francisco right after the book launch. So I'm very excited.
Yes. Oh my gosh. That makes so much sense to do that. Do you mind me asking, how old were you when you moved to America from India?
I was 15.
Wow. 15 is prime time teenage years.
I know, right? It kind of helped a lot when I was writing the book because I felt like I could write from the perspective of Dimple, who had immigrant parents, but also from the perspective of her parents, who are immigrants themselves. It was kind of a great vantage for me.
What I love about this is that modern day version of arranged marriages. You were 15 when you moved here. Were you very familiar with arranged marriages or stories that you've heard through family members? Was that something that you could feel very confident in writing about without having to dive too much into research?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. So all of my older relatives, I'm trying to think if there were exceptions, but I think really all of my older relatives that I knew and talked to had been arranged marriages. It was a very common, normalized thing for me in my family. I didn't feel like I had to do too much research into how that worked, what it would feel like. The only thing I had to fudge a little was that this was a YA book, and nowadays it would be not very common for parents to try to arrange their kids' marriage when they're so young.
Oh, girl, if my mom can arrange marriages, trust me, she'd be arranging left and right. She is getting real pushy about some boys towards my sisters, and I'm like, you better calm down. I know it's not that common, but I'm sure there's plenty of parents who'd love to, and my mom being one of them.
Right? Yeah, and so they do arrange marriages still, and when they're teenagers, that's what I try to emphasize in the book, that it was more about seeing if they were compatible for marriage at a future date. It wasn't so much that they wanted them to get married right away.
That's so funny. I do relate to that. From me approaching and seeing it from a writer's point of view, I'm like, how are we going to tackle this topic of arranged marriages, but in an authentic way that's relatable, that resonates in current modern day? I think you did a fantastic job of making it very, very genuine in that way.
Oh, thank you so much. That means a lot to me. And yeah, I recently spoke with an interviewer. She was not Indian or Asian. And she said, a lot of times on TV, we see this creepy portrayal of arranged marriage where it's a much older guy and a much younger woman. And they're kind of pressured into it. And so it was really refreshing to see the side of it. And I was like, well, you know, for me growing up with arranged marriage, I never saw the creepy older guy and the younger woman. That's not the reality for a lot of middle class Indian people. I really cherished the opportunity to tell it from the reality of it.
For me, my mom's like, no dating till college. Then college comes around. No dating till after you graduate. So I'm like, so you just never want me to date. You just want me to die old and lonely. I'll just be there taking care of you guys till you're much older. Like, that's all you want. Dream come true. But now with my sisters, oh, it is tables turned left and right. Okay, if you date, as long as you bring him home so mom can say hello.
Oh, wow.
Where is this disconnect? If I brought a guy home, my mom probably would beat my ass back then, but she changed a lot.
Oh, I know what you mean. Totally.
It's so funny to see how times have changed. How about for you growing up? What was the age allowed for you? Were you able to talk to your parents about dating? Because I know I felt a little awkward until now. I'm way more comfortable, obviously, because I'm a lot older. We'll bring up sex and stuff like that. I do it for fun to like push my mom's buttons to piss her off. But in the end, she turns around and makes like some perverted comment. I'm about to throw up. So the joke's on me. I'm like, ew, I'm backfired.
Did not see that coming. My family was definitely not open to dating or anything like that. They were fairly conservative about all that stuff. But I did meet my husband when I was 16, so that tells you something about that. I did not adhere to their rules very well. It's all me and my choice. My husband is Caucasian American. I met him a year after I moved here, and we were best friends for a year before we started dating.
That's so cute!
You know, right? Oh my gosh. My parents were definitely not all like okay with it. But I think that moving to a new country when you're 15, you acculturate pretty fast. And I think I almost did it too fast. I wanted to fit in so much that I think they saw it coming. They were not completely surprised that I was dating a white boy. After that, I started dating at 17 and I also started college at 17. I think at that point, there was not much that they could do once I moved out of the house. And I knew that. So it was all me. I think that they would have maybe liked it if I had gotten an arranged marriage, but they never really forced us or said that's what you should do or anything like that. Just being from their generation, I'm sure that they would have preferred it.
I think that was a really cool look into how your family approaches it as well. I mentioned earlier that we do have listener questions for you. There is one question while we're talking about this that I would love to weave in. One of our listeners, Camille Guthier, oh gosh, I hope I'm not butchering it. She said she'd love to ask if you ever felt insecure writing own voices, like if you're worried if it would seem too autobiographical, or if you were getting things right. And if so, how do you work through that? Because Camille herself, she's really curious about this because she's been struggling with writing her own voice's story. I know with you, you mentioned it's not your own story. It's a story that the editor pitched, but there's a lot of parallel that you said that you do relate to Dimple in many ways. So what's your take on that?
Yeah. So when I first had this, I was actually very nervous, even though it's very much a story in my lane. And I am an immigrant and I did have immigrant parents and I am a girl. So it shouldn't have made me nervous at all. But I was still nervous because own voices, people, we're not a monolith. There are so many different experiences. And no matter what, you know, there's there's going to be somebody who says, oh, she didn't get it right at all. That's not at all how my family is or my experiences are. I had to put all of that aside. I definitely felt it through all parts of the process. I felt it before I started to write it. I felt it while I was writing it. I felt it during edits. And then when ARCs came out, I was like, oh my God, people are going to read it. What if everybody hates it? Because I just got it. My family is just this weird anomaly. And like, I thought that this is, people can relate to it. So yeah, I can definitely relate to that. And I think what happened every time was that I had to just tell myself that I wrote it with the best of intentions and mm-hmm. I wrote it as true to my experience as I could. And that, of course, there are going to be people who are not going to agree with it or see eye to eye. And that's okay. And that's part of writing. I think any book that you write, there's just not going to be 100% unanimous. Yes, you got it right. For me, it was a conscious and constant dialogue that I had to have with myself and just say, hey, it's okay. Just do your best and then let it go.
Along the same lines of what we were just talking about, trying to be authentic and you're doing your best, do you feel like you had to pull a lot of memories from before you moved?
So definitely, I think that no matter, even if you are own voices, and like I said, I'm writing so much in my own lane, I still wanted to be mindful that I might even have some internalized prejudices or things that I'm not even thinking about that are offensive or hurtful to other people. I definitely did a lot of research. I spent a lot of time talking to my relatives in India, and I spent a lot of time reading certain Indian publications online. There's Brown Girl magazine and Aerogram for one. There's a lot of conversations about people living here who are from India or have parents from India. And I spent a lot of time immersing myself in that. I think it's easy for me living here in the US and all my family's back in India. So I'm not immersed in it all the time like I was. And so it's been a while since I was a teenager. Mm-hmm. And so yeah. I wanted to make sure that I was still being authentic and still being mindful of things and not writing to stereotypes or being lazy about things like that. So I did still spend a lot of time reconnecting with those kinds of memories. And I remember talking to somebody on Twitter who had also immigrated to Canada, just like I did to the States when she was an older teenager, and rehashing our memories because we came from the same background and same area of India. It's crazy the kinds of things that you forget after you've moved here, especially for Dimple and Rishi's parents. I wanted to make sure I wasn't writing caricatures of immigrants or people who were adults when they immigrated to the state. There was a lot of time spent talking to people whose parents are immigrants and things of that nature, and my own family who is now in India but lived here for a period of time. So yeah, definitely I pulled from a lot of my experiences, but I also had to be mindful and do my own bits of research.
Wow. You are such an intentional writer just from everything you walked us through and your thought processes. It's not just creativity anymore, but also having that responsibility and being accountable for it. I have a lot of respect for that. This is a fantastic way for readers who do pick up your book to know that every word that you put through has a lot of intention and meaning behind it. And it also really adds so much more to it when you're reading, right? It's just knowing the story behind the story. I love those. Along the lines of that, I'm going to squeeze in the second listener question for you is by Tara Turley Creel. She wants to read your book so badly. She's so excited for it. And her question is, how do you deal with the buzz of an upcoming release and early reviews? Does it make you more excited or more nervous?
It's been amazing. I wasn't quite prepared for all the buzz, which is a good thing and a bad thing. Yeah. So I'm trying to think how to phrase all the craziness going on inside me in a sane way. It's been really exciting, for one thing, to see that people just have reacted just to the cover. It's gotten Twitter DMs and emails and all these messages from teens who are like, oh my God, she looks like me. I'm so excited. It's not an issue book. It's not about the sadness of poverty in India or anything. It's just a fun book. And I finally have somebody who looks like me, which is amazing and totally makes up for any nervousness that I might have. On the flip side, I don't read reviews. I don't go on Goodreads. I mean, I do go on Goodreads to like accept friend requests and stuff and rate other books, but I don't read my own reviews. So that's the way that I keep calm, or calm in a fashion. Occasionally, I'll still see things that filter through. I try to take in stride. I'm like, okay, well, this book is not for everybody, or this person didn't get the point of the book, whatever. And you kind of have to take it in stride. But for the most part, I try not to read reviews. If people contact me to tell me that they've read it and loved it, and then they give me a link to their review, I'll go read that. I don't seek them out on my own. And I love reading positive reviews. Like, they always make me happy.
I'm sitting here shocked. I can't imagine anything other than positive reviews for you. Seriously. But you know what? I get it. That's your way of protecting you and your creativity and your safe space. I know some people too in the restaurant world. Some are obsessed with reading their Yelp reviews. And a lot of times they're like, yeah, well, it helps me know how to improve my service and whatnot for the restaurant.
Uh-huh.
But it gets to a point where a lot of them I know are just obsessed. And any little negative thing, even if it's not that negative, it affects them so badly where it ruins their work and their artistry. There's others who just don't want to read reviews. They'll hire their marketing team to read through Yelp reviews and then implement whatever they think is actually critical and would help improve the services or the restaurant, then okay.
Yeah. My editor does the same thing. She will go read Goodreads reviews. She won't even tell me it's from a review, but she'll say, what do you think about blah, blah, blah. And then the other day I saw a review and I was like, hey, I actually think this review has a good point, blah, blah. And she was like, oh yeah, I saw that and I already made a note to talk to you about it.
Okay, yeah. That's awesome. Bringing up the word critiquing and improving one's work, if it were seen in that way, I wonder, are you the type of writer who loves to work in workshops in a group setting where you do have critique partners? Or do you like to work more like a lone wolf and kind of do your own thing in your own space and that's where you do your best work?
I am definitely a lone wolf writer. I like to be completely insulated when I'm writing. And I've tried the critique group chapter by chapter thing or writing with a writing buddy. I've tried everything and it just seems like I write best when I'm just writing for myself and I don't feel the pressure if somebody's waiting or watching or, you know.
There was one author I was talking to and she literally will go to the woods and lock herself up for a while and she feels like she writes best there. I would too. I just have to really make sure that I am not writing about anything thriller or murder because I'm going to get real paranoid. Any little creak, any little rustling from the leaves, I will freak out. So I'm like, as long as it's a happy book, then okay, I'll be out in the woods and I'm good to go.
Exactly. Oh my gosh. I can't even imagine writing Stephen King type stuff.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Can you imagine that stuck there? Oh, hell no. You better get me out of this cabin right now. No way. I know you've given us so much of your time and I'd love to wrap it up with just a few more questions. And I want to make sure I get in our third and final listener question for you by Serena Nanua. And she's wondering, what's a piece of advice you would give to writers who are querying literary agents? I know, again, that your journey is very different from everybody else's, but maybe being in the world of a writer longer than most people in our community, do you hear of any stories around you where it might be helpful to share with our community when they're about to query their own literary agents?
Okay, yeah. From what I hear, querying, you need to be super polished and super ready to go. I've heard a couple of people say, oh, well, it takes so long for agents to respond that I will polish my stuff after I query. There's a logic to that, but I think the problem with that is our stories so often change once we have been at it with the revision eyes that you can almost, the entire focus of your story might even change. And so if it does, then your query is kind of not reflective of your story anymore. And the other side of it is too that if you don't have a polished manuscript and an agent is super excited to read your book and comes back to you sooner than you were expecting, that's an awkward place to be. The number one thing I would say is to have everything polished and ready to go. No more revisions, no more nothing. Don't tinker with it. Just set it aside once you're ready to query. And I also think that with a query, it's almost an art form. It has nothing to do really with your novel. I've heard somebody say, and I can't remember who said it, but it's almost a marketing product rather than anything to do with your novels. The more eyes that you can get on your query, the better. There are some people who are just naturally good at writing queries. Maybe it's because I never wrote a query, but I don't think that I would be very good at those short, succinct things. But if you have people in your critique group who have that natural talent, I think definitely tap their resources.
Amazing. Could you share with the community, what is it that you hope listeners can take with them when they read your book? What's your number one thing that you hope that they can walk away with after they close the last page?
That's a great question. My big thing is that a lot of times on the media, we see the brave or the bad brown person or black person or Asian person or disabled person narrative. Mm-hmm. What I want people to take away from the book is that we have lots of different kinds of stories to tell, and we can have lighthearted, happy endings and funny stories and rom-coms, just like white straight people do. And I think that that's what I want people to see, is that we contain multitudes, just like the people who have been getting those stories. It's okay for us to not have the issue book or
yes,
the serious book or the tragic book, and just to have a lighthearted, funny book.
Preach to that. Talk about an amazing wrap up. Yes.
And that wraps up our episode with the delightful Sandhya Menon. Sandhya, you were so much fun to have on the show, and I so enjoyed our chat. Storytellers, I hope you all enjoyed Sandhya's episode as much as I enjoyed sharing it with you. I am so grateful for your support, and thank you for hanging out with us every week. Please say hi to Sandhya on Twitter at @smenonbooks. And head over to her show notes page at 88cupsoftea.com/podcast/Sandhya Menon. If you'd love to support our show by rocking your 88 Cups of Tea swag, head over to 88cupsoftea.com/mug to grab your limited edition 88 Cups of Tea mug, signed by yours truly. Thank you so much in advance for showing your love and supporting our show. That's 88cupsoftea.com/mug. And don't forget to join our Facebook group if you're looking for an intimate community for storytellers where you can check in about your writing and hang out with other storytellers. You can also submit questions for future guests on our show, and we recently added live unboxing and book haul videos. So join me over in our private Facebook group at facebook.com/group/88cupsoftea. There's tons of love, support, and encouragement going on in this special community of ours. I can't wait to hang out with you in there. Join us at facebook.com/group/88cupsoftea. Have an amazing rest of your week, and I'll catch you in the next episode.
Hey guys, it's me again. Thanks so much for listening in on 88 Cups of Tea. Go create something magical today, and I'll catch you in the next episode. Bye.